This podcast is brought to you by DKP & Co. Chartered Accountants. You are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR Football Nation Radio.
Hello, I'm your host, Louise Taffer, with Athos Syrianos. Welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to have your company this evening as we get through another jam-packed program. And also, happy international break, Athos.
Yes, well, I don't know how happy I am given the Socceroos weren't in action, but my second love, Greece, got a win as well against Liechtenstein, and they're coming for Italy in the next few months as well. But here I was, Louise, thinking, what are we going to talk about given there's no A-League? But, you know, Australian football has a funny way of rearing its head and making things newsworthy and relevant. And as we saw, there's plenty to talk about after this weekend.
That is correct. There is plenty to talk about. And just for the record, though, are you a fan of the international break or you're not? Because there's been a lot of discussion, and there usually is around this time of the calendar, lots of people saying they prefer club football.
When there are competitive matches, absolutely, as we saw, if we have vested interests elsewhere, like World Cup qualifiers and Euro qualifiers, absolutely. But it is a bit ironic considering the A-League has been calling for an international break for so long, and yet the Socceroos weren't represented. The Olyroos, of course, were represented, and they got two fantastic wins on the board on the road to 2020 Olympic qualification.
That they did, and we will be talking to the Herald Sun's Dave Davutovic at 5:15 p.m. Australian Eastern Daylight Time. And of course, he wrote an article last week, and he said the reason why the Socceroos aren't playing at the moment is because of the financial stress that Football Federation Australia are under.
As we know, the FFA have to handle quite a number of things from national teams, all levels of national teams. There's so many. The A-League, grassroots football, they're the big umbrella across everything in Australian football. And as we know, there's half a dozen working groups going on at the moment to make sure that this isn't the case moving forward and some of that stress is taken off the FFA, and we can start expanding Australian football through other avenues.
And I think once we move towards an independent A-League, it'll put more onus on Football Federation Australia to really go out and source their own sponsors as they move away from the A-League clubs. They bring in quite a lot of the revenue.
And we should be seeing a blueprint for that, as well as the second division fairly shortly. And we will be speaking, of course, to the AAFC chairman, Robbie Crame. He's been working very hard, along with the PFA and the FFA, to formulate a blueprint for how a second division could work. And we're hearing that that could come out as soon as the end of the month. So very excited to hear what he has to say.
And remember, you can get involved at any time by giving us a call on 03 99 44 99 99, or you can tweet to us at FNR_radio, or if you are joining us on Facebook Live, simply comment below and we'll try and get through as many of those comments throughout the next hour. But some of the top stories making headlines today, as you made us aware just then, Football Federation Australia have released a statement clarifying some of the comments that were made by Chairman Chris Nicu at the weekend, who told the audience of Football Writers Festival that promotion and relegation in the A-League is unlikely until 2034.
This certainly got social media up and about. It appeared to be a fantastic event organised by Benita Merciades, where Chris Nicu was one of the guests there, and many football writers and other people were involved in what appeared to be great discussion. But that was the biggest thing that came out of it, Louise, and Chris Nicu did mention that the current CPA that the A-League clubs agreed to says that the A-League clubs will be in the A-League until 2034. Now, this was agreed to under Frank Lowy's FFA, so quite a long time ago. All the clubs aside from the Wellington Phoenix, of course. And it has been mentioned that this can be changed, and with talks of a second division and pro-rel increasing every day and the likelihood becoming a lot more real every day and every week, I'm sure that they'll certainly be re-evaluating this and seeing whether it is a possibility to change.
Well, again, you've got to look at the scaffolding around the A-League and how appropriate it is for promotion and relegation to come in and at what time? Because as soon as you start promotion and relegation and as soon as you open the pyramid, there's no going back.
No, it's not as though you can open it and close it quickly. And promotion and relegation is a part of that, a big part of that big Australian football to-do list, along with expanding the A-League. And we do have 12 teams. Technically, we have 12 teams. I'd say we need a few more, and we need to hope that those teams come in and be real success stories as well. We need a few more Western Sydney Wanderers type expansion projects, not more so Gold Coast or the Fury. We need those clubs to come in and be successful. We need a strong second division where those clubs are financially viable and can take care of themselves. And then eventually we need promotion relegation. I think a few people might have seen 2034, and I think it sounds a lot further away than what it is. It's 15 years away, and at the moment, I think that appears to be where it's at. It doesn't seem like they're in advanced talks to introduce promotion and relegation. I think they're in advanced talks more so to get this second division up and running, which the AAFC is confident could be implemented by 2020-21.
And that's next season, effectively.
Yeah, well, it would be very, very soon, and next season, you're right, and we will be chatting to Robbie Kramer about all about that. They are still confident that that is their goal, to introduce it by then, and if we have a pretty fully-fledged second division by then, I think it's a step in the right direction.
And you're right, and a second division obviously has to come first before they start promotion and relegation, and that has to be functioning properly before we can introduce promo rel.
Well, that appears to be where the thinking is at the moment. I don't think they're overly keen to introduce it straight away due to there being such significant risks, and of course they have to discuss with the club, the existing A-League clubs, and make sure they're all on board with promotion and relegation, given that everyone has so many different interests and there are so many different stakeholders. I think the right move will be to introduce it later on in the track. We're not quite sure how exactly or when that's going to come about. I'm sure the second division working group, which is working very hard at the moment to get something, a paper, a blueprint up and running, I'm sure that's a key point.
And if you were an A-League club, you'd be quite happy with some of the comments Chris Nicu made. 2034, like, you wouldn't want to be going down at all.
No, you'd want to be playing top football. That's a pretty nice little safety net there, 2034, another 15 years, another a chance to grow the clubs and for the clubs to become a lot bigger. And, yeah, the clubs would be extremely happy. And I don't think Chris Nicu didn't really necessarily provide us anything new. He didn't say that it's completely out of the question that 2024 can't, so promotion relegation can't come in before then. He said that it just appears to be unlikely under the current agreement. So I don't think he necessarily said anything new.
So, and maybe some of his comments were, you know, taken out of context a little bit, because as you said, we did see quite a lot of comments come through on social media over the weekend surrounding this issue, a lot of complaints, a lot of criticism as well. We even heard FFA board member Remo Nogarotto respond to some of the fan concerns to express his confusion over Nicu's statements. And Nogarotto said that the 2034 timeframe appeared to be a personal view of FFA's chairman and not the result of any board discussion. Do you think that comment in itself is showing that there are maybe potentially some fragments within FFA's board already? Or, again, are we reading too much into that?
I think it's still very early. I don't think we can read too much into that. I think what Remo was implying is that if Chris Nicu was to make that announcement or give any indication as to where promotion relegation is at the moment, I don't think he would have done so at a writers' festival. I think, again, he might have just been stating his opinion or might have just been stating the fact, which is did, that the CPA, the current CPA, which was agreed to years ago under Frank Lowy, states that the A-League clubs will be A-League clubs until 2034. And I think it obviously is a big decision to make in the context of Australian football, and one that I think all the board members, as well as the AAFC and the PFA and numerous other stakeholders, it's a conversation for them to continue to have. So I don't think it's anything set in stone just yet.
No, that's exactly right. But exciting because we are heading towards the right direction as the second division comes around and as we begin, more importantly, to introduce these two new A-League clubs.
Yes, well, the Western United made a pretty impressive signing today. Valentino Yule from the Bentley Greens, a key appointment, one that Johnny Anastasiadis would have had a lot to do with, given that he's still the Bentley coach for a few more weeks before he joins the Western United full-time. And, of course, Southwest MacArthur in Sydney have a few big calls to make in the next few months as to who they'll sign, which coach they'll appoint. So it's a very exciting few months for those two clubs especially.
Now, you touch on some of the transfer news that we will get to. Another week, another signing for Western United as they continue to build their squad ahead of the 2019-2020 season. What do you make of the 24-year-old from Bentley Greens?
He's an exciting player, and obviously Johnny A would have had his eye on him for quite some time, and we could see quite a few Bentley players move across to Western United and make that professional jump, which one of the reasons why we're expanding the A-League is we want to bridge the gap between the professional and the grassroots, because the gap is too big, and a great way to bridge that is through having more teams and more professional pathways. So I think it can only be a good thing if these players are up to it. You can't just, of course, bring in players for the sake of it just to fill a team. I'm sure Western United, run by Lou Sticker, who has run a successful season with Carlton, getting him to the grand final. So he knows exactly how to build a team that would have had the blueprint of the Western Sydney Wanderers and Melbourne City as to where they are today. So I think they're going to be quite selective in picking a really strong team, and the players, they're going to make some difficult decisions. Or not difficult decisions, but they're going to be quite meticulous as to who they pick, because I'm sure they want to pick players based on a certain style and players who can fit the mould well at the club.
So what does Valentino bring to Western United? Those who haven't seen him at NPL level.
Yeah, so he's a great attacking player. He's got a great pace about him. He's very tall too, so he can provide that aerial threat too. We're not quite sure how he'll fit into the system. I'm sure he'll get plenty of minutes, though. He'll be an exciting player, as his NPL, other NPL players who made the jump to the A-League have been.
And I heard he was born in a Kenyan refugee camp. Again, another interesting story, and you can just see how many different cultures and backgrounds are now coming into the A-League.
Yeah, he's a fantastic story, as is Elvis Kamsoba, and one of the great things about football, especially in Australia, is we can bring these guys together, and who knows what the future holds. He can do wonderful things for Australian football.
Now, moving around the grounds in terms of transfer news, Socceroos striker Tommy Juric has been linked to a shocking move, Athos, to an Indonesian.
It's surprising. I don't know if it's shocking. Persib Bandung in Indonesia. He has been linked. He's fallen out of favour in Switzerland.
We know because his contract is out at the end of the season in May.
So he has, and he hasn't played for quite some time. Still only 27 years old, so still plenty of time for him to get back into the Socceroos frame. But you'd think, given how successful Apostolos Yonu was in Asia, how well he played, and you've got players like Martin Boyle in the fold now as well. So you'd think that Tommy Juric really has to start playing some first team football, and a lot of it ASAP.
How much do you think? How much truth do you think is weighing into this whole report coming out about, you know, the fact that he's being linked to an Indonesian Premier League club?
It's difficult to say. We saw he responded to a few of the rumours on social media with the laugh emojis. So read into that what you will. But it always is interesting to see where these players are linked to. I'm sure a lot of the times players are often surprised themselves as to where they've been linked. So we will have to wait and see. We do want to see Tommy playing first-team football as soon as possible, because he's certainly a capable striker. On his day, he can do wonderful things on the field, as we've seen. He's played Europa League. He's scored in European competitions. It's just been unfortunate that he hasn't been able to find that consistency at club level and push for Socceroos selection.
Well, that's exactly right, because, as you say, he is and has been out of favour at his Swiss club, Luzern, for quite some time. And you'd have to say that the fact that he's not getting any game time, he's really not able to work on his craft, and therefore it was really no surprise that he wasn't called up to the Socceroos Asian Cup squad.
And as you saw, Apostolos Yonu had a great campaign, and you'd think he is a big part of Graham Arnold's future.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR with Louise Taffer and Athos Syrianos. And joining us now is the Herald Sun's Dave Davutovic. Dave, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Good evening.
Dave, we're currently talking about some of the reports that have come out surrounding Socceroos striker Tommy Juric, who's been linked to an Indonesian Premier League club. Do you know if there's much in this?
Not too much more aside from the reports that I've read thus far. So, look, he's obviously in limbo, hasn't played a lot of football over in Switzerland of late. And, obviously a potential opportunity for him there. What was it, 4 or so years ago where he was linked to one of the Chinese Super League clubs and it was a big money offer which he rejected. And, in hindsight, and I think Tim Cahill may have ended up taking up that opportunity. In hindsight, perhaps, regretting not taking, not accepting that offer from a financial viewpoint. But, it's always a difficult situation and one that, it's a good lesson for anyone involved in Australian football. We sort of look at some of these Asian countries and Asian opportunities almost with disdain, especially for players who are in their 20s, saying that they're greedy, they're going for the money. And sometimes, everyone just presumes that those offers will always be there. But, in many cases, it can be a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. And that's the way it sort of unfolded for Tommy Juric. So Indonesia, I'm sure, wouldn't be as lucrative. But in saying that, the Indonesian league is certainly up and coming. The fans are absolutely fanatical over there. And, certainly will be, a fairly decent monetary offer, I guess, when you compare it to, potentially what he could earn in the A-League at the moment in the salary cap environment. So, I guess whatever he chooses, good luck to him. He's a player with enormous potential. I know he's had knee issues of late, especially, leading into that World Cup, which really affected his performances. But, he's a great talent and, hopefully he can continue to go on and fulfil that.
And he's certainly a very capable striker, as you mentioned. On his day, he gets himself into some fantastic positions. It's just unfortunate he hasn't been able to score too many goals for the Socceroos. But, Dave, on your comment about us here maybe looking at Asian offers in disdain, is that because we don't see the Asian countries like China as a good place for our Australians to develop? Do we see Europe as being a better place for players like Tommy Juric at the time to develop and become the players that we hope they can be?
Yeah, definitely. And look, Europe is the football mecca, the big five leagues, the UEFA Champions League, World Cup dominance, obviously. So, it's obviously, it's the case anywhere around the world. The Europe and especially, the Premier League, the La Liga, especially the top teams, the Serie A, still the big ones, German Bundesliga as well. So, that's where if we're talking about potentially winning World Cups one day, we need to have Australian players playing in the big five European leagues, as we did back in in that golden era, that golden generation, the 2006 World Cup. At the moment, we don't have many, but Asian football is rising. I just spent time in Japan. Obviously, we've seen the national teams, for the last 12 or 13 years competing against the Socceroos, and the Socceroos are finding it tougher and tougher and tougher. And I think there's certainly a disrespect there a lack of knowledge from a lot of people who just sort of look at these teams on paper, your Indonesias and Thailands, and think, we're better than them. Why are our players going there? But, unfortunately for those people who haven't sort of followed it closely over the last few years, I think they could be in for a rude shock over the next few years. So you're linking it back to Tommy Juric. If he ends up going to Indonesia, then good on him, because I think, the standard of that competition, whilst you can't compare it to Europe yet, I think might surprise people.
And Dave, where do you think might be a realistic place for Tommy to move to in terms of a club?
Oh, look, I'm not sure. I mean, I'm not sure about the club specifics, but that's for him to obviously to work out. But I know he's really keen on getting to the German Bundesliga, and there was some interest sort of 18 to 24 months ago. He's been at FC Luzern for several years now. He left Australia at a really young age to play in Croatia. I think he was 15 or 16, and then obviously came back with Adelaide briefly, and particularly with the Wanderers was where he sort of really got back on the radar, and eventually worked his way into the Socceroos squad. So he's a great talent. He's a really good player, but just injuries and, you know, the problem that affects a lot of Australian players, the lack of games in those critical ages, I think, perhaps have gone on to hurt him a little bit. So, good luck to him. And, you know, he's sort of in that, I mean, he should be in his prime close to his prime now. So, you know, you look, being absolutely realistic, if you're looking at him as a Socceroos number one striker, Indonesia is not where you want him to be going at this stage of his career. But, it's different. You know, I mean, he missed out on the Asian Cup squad, and I'm not sure where his body's at the moment. So, the proof will be in the pudding.
And Dave, Athos and I were both reading your article that you wrote last week surrounding basically where Football Federation Australia are at and why the Socceroos aren't actually playing in this current FIFA window. I found it fascinating because this is actually the first time since 2004 that they haven't played in an international break.
Yeah, I mean, there was one in 2007 where, it was, I think, a month after the Asian Cup they didn't play, which is completely understandable. But, taking that aside, and last September where Graham Arnold got the boys into camp but chose to play, chose to just train instead of playing games. Back to 2004 where the match calendar was a little bit all over the shop, and back in the days when Soccer Australia couldn't really, that was sort of that transition period from Soccer Australia to FFA, but they sort of struggled to, bankroll the national teams back then. And it's a bit of history repeating, unfortunately. I remember being at the game, showing my age now, but in February 2003, when Australia famously beat England at Upton Park, when Sven-Goran Eriksson changed 11 players at half time and was absolutely hammered. And that game, off the back of obviously missing out on the 2002 World Cup, was, that was their first game in, I think, 15 or 16 months. So, I just think it's unfortunate. I think the Socceroos should be playing. I mean, I know Graham Arnold's coaching the Oli Roos, and we're getting into this discussion about how important the Oli Roos are. Well, of course they're important. All of the Australian youth national teams are important, but so are the Socceroos, and we can't afford to be missing out on games when you've got such a finite amount of opportunities to play international games. You've just got to take every opportunity, to play these games. You know, we're not Brazil. We don't have an amazing amount of depth. There's so many players out there. I mean, the Oli Roos are theoretically the next generation. But again, next generation of Socceroos. But our players are late developers, late bloomers. So there's guys who are 23, 24, 25, even in their late 20s who, we're on the periphery and we should have a look at them. I mean, Ryan Williams, he's on the Wales radar, pretty much plays every week for Rotherham in the championship. Fran Karacic got called up by the Socceroos and remains uncapped. James Holland playing really well over in Austria. Guys like Matthew Sporanovic and Reece Williams are playing well. And haven't been in the setup for quite a while. Terry Antonis, who, if you rewind 4 years, very similar to where Aaron Moy was at in his career, having just come back from overseas and really, rejuvenated himself. So there's so many players. I mean, this talk of, the Socceroos need a break because of the travel, I think it's absolute hogwash. The top boys like like Moy and Ryan and all that who are playing regularly in the big five leagues. No dramas. Leave them behind. You know, they're playing regularly and probably could do with the rest. But go through the, you know, anyone who's out there and got a bit of time on their hands, do yourself a favour and go through the list of the current Socceroos or even the Asian Cup squad and have a look at how many club games they've played this season. Not a lot of them are regulars. So the whole thing about, you know, having a rest is absolutely ridiculous for mine. So economic factors obviously playing a part as well, and that's something that FFA, you know, really needs to look at and reassess. You know, it's been an ongoing issue, but it needs to be resolved.
And is there almost a bit of a... You are right when you say that the depth might not be amazing, but there certainly is depth. You've got some great players in the A-League, someone like a Lawrence Thomas as well, who's been on the fringe for quite some time. Is there a bit of a hesitation to perhaps blood these players, or is it more of an economic thing as to why the Socceroos aren't playing?
I'm probably a bit of both, but I'd say it'd be economics at the moment, and the fact that Graham Arnold's coaching both of the teams, and the Oli Roos are obviously in the midst of their AFC Under 23 championships, which are the doubling up as the qualifiers for Tokyo 2020. So again, massively important. Australian youth football, I'm one of the biggest advocates for it. That's, you know, a big part of the, you know, the reason I fell in love with the game, you know, following Australia's youth national teams under 17s, under 20s, under 23s. But, you know, I mean, when they made the decision to give Graham Arnold both jobs, you know, it's something they should have factored in. And, you know, maybe it's Arnold coaching the Oli Roos, and yeah, I don't know, for this window, maybe it was, you know, Rene Meulensteen coaching the Socceroos or the other way around. I'm not sure, but it should have been factored in, and there should not be a FIFA international window where the Socceroos are not playing a game. I just think it's absolutely ridiculous.
And, well, that's exactly right. Do you think we could see Graham Arnold potentially give up his job as Oli Roos head coach moving forward? Because surely it won't be able to work with the both.
I don't think so. And to be honest, like, rarely do they, you know, overlap. You know, I think the next, if they get through this phase of qualifiers, the next ones are, I think, in January next year, the sort of decisive tournament over in Thailand. I mean, obviously, you want them playing in FIFA windows to ensure the players are available. But, yeah, I think my information was that Rene Meulensteen was the one who was going to be coaching the Oli Roos moving forward. So, look, the FIFA match calendar is set about 3 or 4 years in advance. So even though the AFC qualifying tournaments tend to be, penned down a little bit later, you've got a pretty good idea of, you know, of the dates and all that moving forward. So really, there's no excuses from the FFA viewpoint. I've got, and don't get me wrong, this is not an attack on Graham Arnold. I've got theoretically no issues with, you know, the national team coaching both sides. A similar thing's happening over in Japan, but obviously it's a little bit different for them because they all qualify automatically for the Olympics as the host. So, I tweeted last week, this isn't about Graham Arnold. It's about what's best for Australian youth football. And you can't tell me that the Socceroos not playing in a FIFA international window helps them.
It's certainly a big question that needs to be asked. And in a more positive light, it is good to see the Oli Roos getting two wins in a row, and they've got a big game against South Korea looming. We are, of course, speaking with the Herald Sun's Dave Davidovic on Monday's edition of the Journos. And Dave, just before we let you go, one of the big talking points from the weekend were Chris Nicku's comments about promotion relegation. Your thoughts on what he said at the Writers' Festival?
Yeah, I mean, look, I wasn't there, so I'll preface everything that I'm about to say with the fact that I wasn't there, and I don't know, you know, under what, circumstances those remarks were made. I know it was a Football Writers' Festival, a fantastic event, organised by Benita Mercedes at the Jamboree Pub, which is obviously synonymous with the great Johnny Warren. And I saw a lot of photos of people, you know, having beers and talking football, which is always good fun. So I'm not sure whether it was Chatham House rules or what it was, but, you know, from what I can gather, I think Chris Nicko, the chairman, was merely stating the facts as they are, which is the existing clubs signed a participation agreement until 2034. So, obviously, for relegation and promotion to kick in before that, something would need to change. So, I presume it was said in that forum as opposed to an interview. So, again, for those who aren't aware, often you'll go to events and there are Chatham House rules, which is, you know, basically not for publication. So I'm not sure whether that was the case or I saw it reported by a couple of journalists. I presume that may not have been the case. But, I do feel for Chris Nicko because, you know, he's a good man. He's a good operator and he does, hold football dear to his heart, and you know, wants to make positive changes. And I get the sense that there's a lot of long-standing vitriol from the old FFA administration and the botched transition from the National Soccer League through to the FFA. And I think there's a lot of people who were just itching to sort of get the gloves on and vent their frustrations at Chris, because he's certainly an easier target than what the previous chairman was, Stephen Lowy, and certainly the one before that, Frank Lowy, because, you know, those guys obviously didn't take too well to criticism. I think the guy deserves a go. To be honest, I think promotion will absolutely kick in before 2034. Relegation, look, it's all good making these sweeping statements. We want relegation, we want relegation. But, you know, let's be brutally honest. You cannot relegate teams until you have a commercially viable second division, which is why, in my view, the second division absolutely has to be fully professional. It can't be semi-professional. It can't be a reheated NPL. The quicker we get a full-time professional second division up and running, the quicker we will have relegation from the A-League and promotion, of course. So I'm all for it, but that's why all the attention needs to go on the second division. And, you know, it's almost irrelevant getting bogged down in dates and 5 years, 10 years, all that sort of stuff. Let's put all our energies and resources into the second division and go from there, because the quicker you get that up and running, the quicker you can kick in relegation, which is inevitable, and I'm all for it. But, you know, I think you've also got to add some, reality to the discussion.
Well, Dave, thank you so much for joining us on Evenings on FNR, and enjoy the rest of the international break, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, guys. All the best.
Take care. That is the Herald Sun's Dave Davidovich joining us there to chat about, lastly, the heated discussion, promotion, relegation. He says it's inevitable, but again, as we touched on, there is a process and we have to get the second division up and running first.
Yeah, that appears to be the general consensus and is what the working groups are currently working towards at the moment. All seven of the working groups will be joined by AAFC Chairman Rabbi Graham very shortly to discuss how they're progressing with talks around the second division as well.
That's exactly right. You're listening to Evenings on FNR with Louise Taffer and Athos Syrianos. And remember, you can get involved at any time by giving us a call on 0399 449 999, or you can tweet to us at FNR_radio. What are your thoughts? We'd love to hear them. Joining us now is the chairman of the AAFC, Rabbi Graham. Rabbi, thank you so much for coming on Evenings on FNR.
No problem. Thank you for having me, Louise.
Rabbi, what did you make of Chris Nicko's comments at the weekend at the Writers' Festival?
I'd agree with Chris's comment in that we need to have a second division competition that's financially viable. I think the comment in relation to 2034, I think, was disappointing. But, you know, in that context, I've had a discussion with a couple of the FFA directors, and really, we're focused on getting a second division up and running, and as well as having that discussion in relation to promotion relegations.
Robbie, it's Athos here, and we know the AAFC, as well as a number of other great organisations in football, have been working towards this second division for quite some time. There is that working group. Do we know when we will have a blueprint or a paper to see how this can start going?
Look, we're committed to, I mean, the working group's met now on three occasions, and there's further work to happen. Our intention is by the end of this month is to have what we call a white paper that could go towards supporting the new league working group. And the intention that really for us is by the end of June is to have a model ready to go out to the clubs and see some expressions of interest. So we're working on some tight timeframes. We've set ourselves the goals. AFC hasn't wavered from getting a second tier of the championship, as we've called it, up and running. And, we have to get that up and running before, without that, there's no dialogue about promotion relegation because there's nothing to talk about.
And Robbie, do you think some of the clubs that originally bidded for an A-League licence might be in the discussion for a second division spot?
I think there's a lot of people have shown interest. Some of the existing NPL clubs, some organisations that looked at, when they were bidding for an A-League licence. I think there's a whole wide range. There's no doubt there is interest in organisations and clubs who want to be involved in a second division. What we need to do is make sure we develop the model that can be sustainable, give the opportunities to those clubs, but also we need to make sure that we're providing the opportunities for those clubs who aspire to go to a high level to be able to use the second division as a platform. I think what we're also talking about, there's no doubt the A-League wants to expand and it wants to get to a 16-team competition. So I think there's more greater opportunities for expansion and promotion within the A-League before we start talking about relegation.
And of course, we are speaking with the AAFC chairman, Robbie Crame, who joined us on Evenings on FNR to discuss all things second division, which is an exciting development in Australian football. What's the dialogue been like, Robbie, between yourselves and the FFA? We know Remo Nogareto is heading the working group and has been involved in a lot of the discussion in the second division. So what's the dialogue been between yourselves and the FFA in relation to this?
Look, we've got a great working relationship, Remo and I, and even we had a long chat again today about it, and we haven't lost sight of what we need to get done. And, I think from where we were 17 months ago when the AFC launched its blueprint or draft for the championships to where we are today, it's we've made incredible headroad. And, where today discussions are, we're looking at completing a document and a process where we will have a blueprint for a second division that will be tested, but most importantly, it will end up being a financially viable that will need to get interest from clubs. So the FFA, through Remo, have been very proactive in working side by side with the AAFC to deliver what we set out 18 months ago. And I think from the games perspective, everyone realises that we need a second division. There's no question about it. I haven't met anybody that says we don't need one. I think the game needs a second division more than anything else, and I think that will further add interest to not only the A-League, but right across the board. So I think we've got all the right people behind it. Now we're just going to make sure we make it happen, and that's what we're focused on. And with the FFA and also the state federations have been very much on board with it. We're united in making sure that we get it up and running.
And Robbie, realistically, when do you see promotion and relegation coming in if 2034 is a bit too far away?
Well, I think we've got to put it into context. The A-League clubs are currently 11 going to 12 in 2020. They want to expand to 16 teams. There's a new television negotiation broadcasting deal to happen, I think it's 2023. So they've got to get themselves into a viable financial modelling process where the next television contract can support an A-League. You get a second division up and running, let's call it, if it's not 2020, talk of 2021. You're in 2021. You're talking within within the next 5-6 years before anything could happen. But you're talking then about offering those clubs in the second division, hopefully an opportunity that if they're good enough, they're given an opportunity to be part of an expansion of the A-League. But both leagues have got a lot of work to get done and then create a model that how the promotion relegation works. And that's one thing that hasn't happened as yet. You know, we're talking about promotion relegation, but we haven't actually sat down as a group between all parties to say, how does promotion relegation work? What needs to happen? What is a criteria? I mean, so at the moment, from a AAAC perspective, we're focused on getting the championship up and running. There is no doubt there is a there's an acknowledgement under FIFA Statute 9 that we need promotion relegation. We then need to sit down with the relevant parties, work together and say, how's it going to work? What's it going to look like? And I have not had a negative feedback from the A-League clubs about it, promotion relegation. The only question is, let's sit down at a point of time and work how it's going to happen. But we definitely need a second division financially viable to even start having that dialogue.
And we know a second division will work towards providing so many great pathways for footballers. We've seen fantastic developments with NPL players transitioning into the A-League, and we hope to see more of that as the gap is bridged. And Rabi, for new football fans, how do you feel a second division will work toward attracting them who might be more inclined to follow an A-League club?
Well, you've got to look at you've looked at most of the clubs that have put a hand up or interested in the second division already involved in community football through NPL. So you've already got kids already playing the game, both the boys and girls, who already associate themselves with a club. And what you're trying to do is get those people to start, you know, have the vision that they can start at a club and under six and work their way through. But what you're also trying to do is engage with the whole football community is by having that linkage and rewarding clubs who provide players. And, I think what it does, it gives people hope. And when you give people hope, they'll follow it. At the moment, you know, if you're a young player playing the game, what do you see? You see the A-League as the highest league, but how do you get there? And when you look at how many spots are available, you know, there's more chance of me winning Lotto than making it into the A-League. So it's about giving hope, giving opportunities, and and engaging with the community. And I think that's the biggest thing the second division will create. It will actually put the heart and soul back into football, because it is those clubs are the heart and soul of football.
Well, Rabi, thank you so much for joining us on Evenings on FNR to give us that update as to where you're at and, you know, put some of those comments about promo and rel to bed for the time being. And we look forward to chatting to you again sometime soon.
Louise, I'll just one more. When you look at it, 17 months ago, no one thought that we'd be talking about having a second division. In 17 months, we've got to where we are. I think people have just got to have the belief that there are enough people fighting for the game, as well as knowing that promotion relegation is an integral part of the game. Who knows where we're going to be in 2 years' time? We're confident that we'll end up what is best for football, and there will be promotional relegation once we get a financially viable model, both for an A-League and for the second division.
Well, that's exactly right. There's steps in place before promotion and relegation comes into hand, and they have to be put out first.
Thanks, Louise. Thanks, Athos.
Thanks. That was the chairman of the AAFC, Rabi Crayham, joining us there to discuss promo rel, where the second division is at, and the second division is moving forward, and plans are moving forward.
Always great chatting to Rabi Crayham there, and it's very exciting that we might see a white paper by the end of the month, and they're working on quite a tight timeline and time frame, and to have certain deadlines now in March and in June, and 2021 is not too far away, and to have a fully fledged second division with a whole range of different teams, whether they be existing NPL clubs or new consortiums in, that big decisions have to be made there, Louise, and it's exciting, but it's a lot of hard work. We'll have to continue to go into it.
Now, I don't know if you heard the news over the weekend, the other reasonably big news surrounding an NPL club and a Bundesliga club.
I did come across this with Borussia Mönchengladbach, was it?
Borussia Dortmund.
Borussia Dortmund.
So basically, they actually signed an official partnership with ex-NSL powerhouse Marconi.
Yeah, well, Marconi just came back into NPL New South Wales last season, and they'll be looking for a big year this season. They are one of the biggest clubs in Australia, so it'll be pivotal for them to lift some silverware and get themselves back into the top echelon. So anything that can help them get there is a massive bonus, and I'm sure this partnership with Borussia Dortmund Dortmund will go a long way to ensuring that the Marconi players and their youth can be brought up under the right system.
Well, that's exactly right. And from the Marconi perspective, I think the long-term aim is to have at least one player from the club make it in the Bundesliga.
That would be sensational if it happens.
Is that too far-fetched?
Absolutely not.
Is that achievable?
Well, it's certainly achievable. I think any club in Australia is capable of developing great players or being a club that can act as a stepping stone to greater things. I think that's for all clubs, whether they be community clubs or NPL clubs, that's what they're ultimately trying to do. They're there to develop players and see players achieve bigger things. I know if I was running a local club, I'd love nothing more than seeing one of my players move from my club to maybe a South Melbourne and play for them before going to bigger and better things. So I think it's certainly very achievable. And having Borussia Dortmund there, having maybe clinics and having the opportunities to maybe go to Germany and see how it works in the professional environment, I think not only will it motivate the kids, but it'll be an eye-opener too for them to realise what it takes to be a professional footballer.
And I hear that Borussia Dortmund are also looking to tour the country and even play some of the A-League clubs in 2020. It seems
some good practice match opportunities.
Well, it seems that they feel like they're missing out, given, you know, there's been a whole host of English Premier League clubs who have announced that they're coming on tour to Australia.
And certainly, I think Borussia Dortmund is on the bucket list for many football fans, considering the atmosphere they can create there. It's a small town, Dortmund, but they're all football nuts. I think it's just under 500,000 people which call Dortmund home.
And oh, the yellow wall looks amazing.
The yellow wall is certainly something that's on the bucket list of many football fans. And they're doing okay at the moment, Borussia Dortmund. And I think it'd be great to see someone else other than Bayern Munich win the Bundesliga for a change. And if they can grace our shores here in Australia and maybe bring some of that fan support with them, I think we'd absolutely love that.
We would. We certainly would. And moving on to some of the other stories around the country that played out at the weekend, we also heard that in transfer news, Brisbane Roar's captain Matt Mackay will actually wait until the end of the A-League season to announce his future plans, given the uncertainty around the fact that they don't even have a coach yet and Darren Davies most likely won't stay on.
It's fair enough, considering he's been at the Roar for so long. He's been involved in some fantastic sides at the Brisbane Roar, and as well as national team level. He was an integral part of Australia winning the Asian Cup, so he's had a fantastic career so far. Where the future holds, or what the future holds for Matt Mackay, nobody knows but him. He might look for opportunities overseas, or might look to the NPL in Queensland, or might move somewhere else completely. So looking forward to see what he does at the current time.
And also Socceroo and Huddersfield's Aaron Moy is almost certain to sign another deal with an English Premier League club at the end of the season.
Do we know which club that is?
We don't, but he wants to stay in the EPL, even though Huddersfield are well and truly going down.
Well, he is a big part of Huddersfield, isn't he? The fans adore him. He was a big reason as to why they gained promotion into the Premier League. He scored a vital penalty in that shootout, and I'm sure the fans will be very disappointed to see him go. But again, as an Australian football fan, you want to see your players playing in the top leagues, and there's no better league than the Premier League.
Realistically, where could Aaron Moy go? What English Premier League club would be suitable?
You'd want to see him getting as many minutes as possible. So I think any club really outside the top six could be a happy home for Aaron Moy. There are some fantastic midfielders in the Premier League, but someone like an Everton maybe, or a West Ham or a Newcastle, some of those teams that are thereabouts and pushing for Europa League, you'd want him to go somewhere with a bit of security and not having that threat of relegation, like a Huddersfield, who's not traditionally a Premier League or a First Division club. They were quite fortunate to make the Premier League, and they did survive one season with Aaron Moy there doing his thing, but unfortunately it's not looking likely this season. So as an Australian football fan, I think you'd want him to go somewhere where he's going to get the first team football and be able to make an impact.
And it's interesting because his contract expires in 2020.
Yeah, well, as we know, in international, or not international football, but in football, in those big leagues, contracts mean peanuts. So I don't think that's anything to worry about if you're Aaron Moy.
I'd be interested to see if Matty Ryan stays at Brighton, because they're They're not looking like they're going down. I think they've survived now.
Brighton and Hove Albion. Yeah, we have heard that he's received offers from a range of clubs, and he's got a pretty impressive CV, moving to Valencia, to Club Bruges, where he really made a name for himself before going to Brighton and really nailing down that number one spot. I think the sky's the limit for him. Whether one of the bigger Premier League clubs will be willing to have a risk and perhaps look at someone like a Matt Ryan, who was at a Brighton and Hove Albion, to fill that role. As we know, goalkeepers can go between anything north of 90 million, as we saw with Liverpool and Chelsea and their transfer activity. So I'm confident Ryan will keep playing in Europe's top league because he's a top goalkeeper.
And going back to some of the comments that Dave Davutovic made a little earlier, I actually think it's really disappointing that the Socceroos aren't playing in this international window, because again he highlights something vital, and that's the fact that not Matty Ryan but some of the other Socceroos aren't actually playing week in, week out. So this international break, a period in time where they could clock up a few minutes under their belt, even though it might be a friendly or not, it's still minutes that's valuable. And at the moment, they're not getting that at all.
Yeah, it's incredibly ironic, considering in the A-League we've been calling out to have weeks off during this international period, and here we are with A-League clubs not playing and Australia's national team not playing, albeit the Olyroos are playing and they did extremely well with two big wins. But there is enough talent in Australia, in the A-League. There is enough talented Australian players to field a national team for one or two games to compete. Have Lawrence Thomas in goals. You don't necessarily have to bring your big stars, although they are allowed to come because it's a FIFA window. So there's enough talent out there to field a team of players who can compete against any opponents.
So what you're saying is just bring all the internationals, the Australians abroad, who are in Socceroos contention, over to Australia. They face off against an A-League-based Socceroos team. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm saying organise a friendly. There's enough nations out there not qualifying for Euros and doing playing in competitive matches.
Oh, there are. Matches. But again, it comes back to economic reasons as to why they haven't actually scheduled any international friendlies.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Well, that's what FFA is telling us anyway. It is disappointing, considering there are a number of players who have been on that periphery, on the cusp of selection, guys like Lawrence Thomas and the Williams brothers, and so many decent players. Even someone like a Danny Vukovic, who has been in, unfortunately, playing second fiddle to Matt Ryan for so long, and he's had a terrific career. So I am confident that we will be seeing a lot more of these players represent Australia, given that the FFA is pushing very hard to join competitions like the Suzuki Cup, which is among all the Southeast Asian sides. And I think given those matches don't fall in a FIFA window, it'll give a lot of those other players on the fringe chances to represent Australia.
It'll be interesting to see what happens there. Of course, again, some of those Socceroos players missing out on valuable game time, but you touched on the Olyroos. They did play two games at the weekend, one on Friday and one last night. And the one last night, they defeated Chinese Taipei, or Taiwan, 6-0. And it was the same scoreline in the opening match against Cambodia as they attempted to qualify for the 2020 Tokyo Olympics. Now, Graham Arnold made 10 changes in the team last night, and actually it was the Newcastle Jets defender Ivan Vujicic, the only player to retain his squad, to retain his position in the starting 11.
And of course, a big game against South Korea.
Massive game, because they're a powerhouse. As we know, you know, the Koreans are really rising in terms of world football, and it's certainly trickling down to the youth national teams.
So for those who aren't aware, Louise, what does Australia have to do in this game against South Korea?
Well, currently South Korea are sitting ahead of us on goal difference.
That's so exactly is it only right. The top team that progresses?
So it is, yes, the top team of each group. But then also we go down to the tier breakers, and the second best team progresses as well.
Okay.
So out of like the fourth place teams.
So a win for Australia is crucial against South Korea, given that their goal difference is superior to ours. And based off the last few performances, I'm sure the Oilers will take a lot of confidence into that make or break game.
And when you look at the four best place second teams mm-hmm. in each group, currently Australia is leading that. So at the moment, if Australia was to progress, it would be Australia, Myanmar, Iran and Syria. And then that would be for the 2020 AFC Under-23 Championship. So currently we're at the qualifiers for the championship,
and of course to be part of that would be a fantastic, and to see Australia in the Olympics for the first time in a long time, it'll certainly go towards relieving some of the pressure on those heading the youth programs, given that youth development and youth football in Australia has been slammed and continues to be doing so, given that there appears to be a lack of players being developed. And while qualifying for an Olympic Games won't make a huge impact, it'll be a step in the right direction.
I just think that we're not getting enough international games into our younger generation. And Graham Arnold, I spoke to him last week, and he said the young players need to be getting at least 15 to 20 international matches into them. We're not getting hardly any of that. So you can see how suddenly the development stagnates. And I truly believe that we have stagnated and, if not, gone backwards over the past couple of years. I mean, I look at the first game and although, you know, read into the results as much as you will, 6-0 and then 6-0, I thought the opening game was pretty sloppy. I really did. I was quite displeased with Australia's performance. But most people won't look at that. They'll just look at the result and think, yeah, that's great. We're doing wonders here in Australia. But reality is we're not. And mark my words, when we come up against South Korea tomorrow, it is going to be a stern test.
Well, the Koreans are one of Asia's best in developing players. Where do you see, if you were to throw a few of those Oli Roos players into the Socceroos, do you reckon they would be able to hold their own in that, given the intensity of international football?
I think maybe 2 to 3.
Okay, and that's
saying
something.
Only a small handful.
And that's saying something, given if you look at a few of the other nations and they're under 23s, given that in a lot of teams, a lot of the core group of players are all under 23 or thereabouts, that age range. Look at France, for instance, and nations like that. They've got such a strong core of youth players.
Well, when you look at this South Korean squad, I was watching their game before the Oli Roos started, and I recognised many of the faces who I saw when I was in Korea at the under-20 FIFA World Cup. Now, you look at that and you think, wow, a lot of these players have already had experience at a youth FIFA World Cup. So they're already coming into this match against Australia one step ahead than us.
And it's not only to develop your game, but it's also the intensity that comes with international football as well. You need that mental and emotional experience, because while there is a difference playing in a Youth World Cup to World Cup qualifiers and then eventually the World Cup, having that experience to be mentally prepared and to actually acknowledge that you're stepping out in your national team's colours, I'm sure that'll go a long way.
And it's dealing with the conditions. We can't forget that Australia, the Socceroos, actually took the longest, or one of the longest ever qualifying routes to the FIFA World Cup.
It wasn't ideal, but we got there.
More than, 25 games, right? So underneath that, you have to learn that you're not always going to come up against, the easiest opposition. You're going to be in trying conditions. That's what the Oli Roos are facing at the moment. They're in, 37 degree heat. They're playing on a synthetic pitch. So suddenly, you've got all these other factors that you throw into what you could call as part of your development.
And Ivan has come through on Facebook and agrees with your point wholeheartedly. Luigi says, all well and good to celebrate a win, but who have we played? The true assessment will be against top Asian nations, which will come very shortly when we take on South Korea, one of Asia's best. And a win will see Australia top the group and progress, deeping it one step closer towards Olympic qualification.
That game against Korea Republic tomorrow evening. Athos, that's all we've got time for this evening, but thank you for your company and thank you for your company at home. If you've missed any of the program, head to FNR's website or FNR's SoundCloud. And until then, we'll see you again tomorrow evening.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.